China's president gets down to business in Chicago.
What will he get and what will U.S. businesses get from the talks?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media, hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York.
And I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. It is Thursday, January 20th. Coming up, the Wendy's Arby's group wants to dump Arby's and put the focus on Wendy's. Also, the richest neighborhood in America isn't near any beach or snow-capped mountain. We'll tell you what it is coming up.
But first, Chinese President Hu Jintao heads to Chicago today as the focus of his visit shifts to the business community. Let's get a first take from Diane Swank, chief economist at Mesirow Financial in Chicago. She joins us from the Windy City. Good morning.
Good morning.
So why is President Hu going to Chicago?
Well, the city has longstanding, particularly Mayor Daley, longstanding relationships with China, heading many trade missions from Chicago to China. And we also have a lot of business ties with the Chinese Investment Corp and Chinese companies as a conduit into the Midwest through the Chicago entryway.
Are there specific things that the Chinese are after there in the Midwest?
Absolutely. There's a high-speed rail that there's been some federal appropriations for, and the Chinese have been very competitive in high-speed rail, trying to garner much of that business, and they've been very aggressively trying to bid for that high-speed rail business. We've also seen many Chinese companies buying up distressed auto assets as the automakers were going through their troubles, because, in fact, they're very interested in the auto industry and gaining that technology.
All right. What do you think U.S. companies are looking to get out of this visit by the Chinese?
Well, you know, we're going to sell them a lot of planes, and certainly we'd like to see some more open trade. We also have strong exports to China, which are very important. But at the end of the day, we really want to see some movement in the peg on the dollar, some appreciation of the yuan to make the U.S. even more competitive. And frankly, the Chinese need to do that in order to cool off inflationary pressures, which are really building in China today.
All right. Diane Swank, chief economist at Mesirow Financial. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, one of the CEOs President Hu is meeting with here in the United States is Boeing's chief executive, following the news that China will be buying billions of dollars worth of airplanes from Boeing. Yesterday, the Chinese delegation met with other CEOs. One of those execs is Michael Morris, who heads up American Electric Power, which is headquartered in Columbus, Ohio. That's where he joins us now. Welcome to Marketplace, sir.
Good morning, Steve.
So President Hu is meeting with the CEOs this morning as well. What goes on in these meetings with the Chinese delegation?
Well, I would hope that it's a continuation of the very constructive, collaborative conversations we've had over the last few days in Washington. The whole notion is, I think, a recognition of two great countries beginning to realize that we need each other maybe more than we think. On the energy space, we've been talking very serious undertakings, commitments on both sides of the aisle to do projects together, to share data. There's a great deal of understood concern over intellectual property. They are offended by that, and our team is protective of that, and that is really straightforward. So the conversation in that space, which is a limiter, gets around to let's find a balance, let's find a way to deal with it.
Your company signed this deal with China's largest power generator,
right,
and the nation's largest electric utility for some clean energy technologies. Are the U.S. and China on the same page when it comes to green energy?
Well, I think that we are. I think they're more aggressive in a sense because they have a form of government that allows them to do that. We were there a few months ago and saw the magnitude of the wind development. So they're probably ahead in that sense, only in that they've got a form of government that allows those things to happen.
You know, there have been a lot of smiles and some big announcements, too, but we know there are a lot of hurdles, such as trade imbalances and currency issues. How do we overcome those things?
Those are all very real issues. And the one thing that they are very critical of is let us get to those places on our own. We don't need your help, nor do we need your criticism. And I guess if I were sitting in their chair, I could understand that. But those are very real issues.
Michael Morris, CEO of American Electric Power, thanks.
You bet, Steve. Thanks for the opportunity to chat.
And for one more take on President Hu's visit, let's bring in one of the top U.S. government officials involved. Lael Brainard is the Undersecretary of International Finance at the Treasury Department, and she joins us now from Washington. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Very good. So you're one of the government officials that's working on the currency issue. A lot of people think China needs to let its currency increase in value. The Chinese have been reluctant to do that because of the possible effect it would have on growth. How have you been bringing that issue up with Chinese officials during this visit, if at all?
Well, this has been the critical issue that we have been working with China on very consistently. The value of their exchange rate matters to us here because it affects the ability of Americans to export. And, of course, exports are critical to job creation. We've seen a lot of progress, not enough. The president was very clear that he wants to see more.
So no announcement expected, at least in the next coming days, you don't think?
The economic agenda for the visit went across the exchange rate issue as well as intellectual property protection and just doing business level playing field issues
right.
for American companies. So the exchange rate was a piece of it, very important as we work to strengthen job growth and the recovery.
All right, let me ask you one more thing. There was news today that China's growth rate was 10% last year. A lot of people are worried about a bubble there. Do you think the Chinese economy is overheating?
Well, Jeremy, let me just flip that around. And why should that matter for the U.S.? They are our fastest-growing export market, as the president made very clear. It is going to be so important to us. Our exports to China grew twice as fast as any other market. And just the last 10 years alone, they weren't even in the top 10 export destinations for U.S. manufacturers 10 years ago. Now they're our number three market. So their fast rate of growth means export opportunities for us, which is why the president was so determined to seize those for American workers.
All right, so no argument there. Well, Lael Brainard, Undersecretary for International Finance at the Treasury Department, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
Well, moving on to other news now. Last night, the Republican-dominated House of Representatives voted to nix the new health care reform law. And that's the end of the line for repeal, because Senate Democrats and President Obama have vowed to shut down the effort.
Opponents of the law can now try to knock off individual provisions they don't like. Republicans are looking specifically at a tax reporting requirement for businesses that's designed to raise revenue to pay for the new health care reform law. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman has more.
This is the kind of regulation businesses love to hate. Starting next year, they'll have to file a tax form for every supplier they spend at least $600 with, on everything from computers to carpet cleaning.
Last year, we filed only 7 1099 forms. If the law were in effect, we'd file 200.
Tim Reynolds runs a software firm in Cleveland, and he's got 35 employees, one of whom does nothing but federal form filing.
Think of it this way. It's a 2,700% increase.
All those extra 1099s are supposed to help the IRS catch tax cheats and raise $17 billion. Reynolds, who's on the board of the National Small Business Association, doesn't think so.
Spread that across the millions of small businesses. That's a heck of a paper flow that the IRS is going to have to handle, and their costs are going to go up.
In keeping with his push to reduce business paperwork, President Obama now supports 1099 repeal. So do some Democrats, though they don't want to cut health care to pay for it. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Thursday, January 20th. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York. Now to the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics at the intersection of the U.S. and the rest of the world.
The situation in Tunisia is still pretty dicey today. Street revolts over high food prices and high unemployment have brought down the government. But how did the message spread so fast? Well, like other protests, through social networks. Yet that technology sword can cut both ways. Yevgeny Morozov wrote the book The Net Delusion, The Dark Side of Internet Freedom, and he's with us now. Good morning.
Glad to be here.
If people use websites such as Twitter and Facebook and Flickr to express themselves, well, those are channels for free speech, right? So how can people be held back if they have access to all this free speech?
Well, the governments also have access to many of the same channels. And what we see happen in places like China or Iran or Russia is that governments are beginning to watch those spaces very closely. There is definitely an element of activists becoming much more effective in planning their campaigns online. But also there is a much more darker element of forces they oppose using the same very platforms to crack down on this activists and dissidents.
I want to talk about Iran. because after the election there, there were thousands of tweets coming in of where these protests were supposedly taking place. Give us an example of what was happening in Iran.
The Iranian government began collecting and analyzing all of the Twitter messages, Facebook messages, Flickr photos, and actually began asking public to identify anyone who they could recognize in the photos. I think as many as 40 people were actually identified on those photos, and some of them were arrested, some of them were interrogated.
I want to talk about the responsibility as well of these sites, Twitter and Flickr, Facebook. How much responsibility do they have? Can they do anything about this?
They definitely can. I mean, it's a tension between how much money they would be able to make from the data and information that they accumulate and how much social responsibilities they would like to carry. There are definitely efforts that, and industry efforts that these companies can join. It's just that some of them do not yet recognize that they have the social responsibility.
Yevgeny Morozov, author of The Net Delusion, The Dark Side of Internet Freedom. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Where is the beef? Apparently not at Arby's. The chairman of the Wendy's Arby's group said this morning he's considering selling Arby's and putting the focus on Wendy's. And in part, this is about global appeal. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer has the greasy details.
When's the last time you went to an Arby's? I certainly haven't been there in a while, and that's the problem. During the recession, most of us ate out less, and we went to the cheaper chains. Arby's sandwiches can cost $5 or more. Arby's was also hurt by the high unemployment rate among its top customers, young men. Sarah Senator is a restaurant analyst at Sanford Bernstein. She says the only way for fast food chains to grow now is to steal customers from competitors or expand internationally in fast-growing markets like China. Senator says that would be difficult for Arby's.
Roast beef is probably a very, very much a typically American kind of sandwich, and it may not resonate as well.
The seafood chain Long John Silver's faces a similar dilemma, as does A&W Brands, whose official name is All American Food. Earlier this week, the parent company, Yum Brands, announced those chains are also up for sale, so it can concentrate on global expansion of its Pizza Hut and KFC brands. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Well, we mentioned how the Republican-dominated House has voted to get rid of health care reform, but Democrats have vowed to end that repeal effort. During the health care debate, some supporters used Britain's medical system as a possible U.S. model. And yet, in the U.K., people aren't entirely happy with it. Now the government's just launched this big shakeup of the health care system there. And Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us from London to talk about the news and why it matters to us here in the United States. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
And what's the problem the healthcare system is dealing with there?
Cost, principally. The cost of healthcare, of course, is rising everywhere. We're living longer, making bigger demands on health services, new drugs and new medical technologies adding to the cost. In the case of the UK, taxpayers pick up the tab, most of the tab, and that tab, the cost of the NHS, according to one estimate, is going to rise by as much as a quarter over the next 3 or 4 years.
The healthcare system there. So how are the reforms supposed to address that, Stephen?
In a nutshell, the plan is that by 2013, family doctors will control most of the national budget. They'll decide how to spend the money according to the needs of their patients. It won't be politicians and civil servants in London telling them what to do. Here's Chris Hamm, head of the medical think tank, the King's Fund.
What this government is doing is saying, let's try to decentralise to improve quality and outcomes for patients by placing much more trust and responsibility in the hands of the local doctors and the clinical teams delivering care.
It's reckoned this reform will cut bureaucracy and eventually save up to $10 billion a year.
Hey, Stephen, any lessons for the US as our healthcare system gets overhauled here?
Well, the US is taking a different approach from the UK, but certainly this British reform does underline the universal pressure of rising costs and the pressing need to allocate healthcare efficiently and fairly.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Stephen, thanks.
Okay, Steve.
And Jeremy, Sven Koppler of Germany admitted to sending hundreds of tarantulas through the mail.
Oh,
I'm glad I didn't get one of these suckers. So, including the Mexican red-kneed spiders, which is a variety protected under international treaty, Koppler was arrested, and faces up to 20 years in prison. He pleaded guilty to federal smuggling charges. He was paid $300,000 for the arachnids by U.S. federal agents posing as buyers in the sweep. You know what the sweep was called?
What?
Operation Spider-Man.
Oh, I don't know why anybody would want to buy spiders.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Thursday, January 20th. I'm Steve Chiotakis, tweeting on Twitter at Radio Chio.
And I'm one of your followers, and I'm Jeremy Hobson. I am tweeting at Jeremy Hobson. We'll have a contest to see who can get the most followers, and you are way ahead of me right now.
Oh, please.
Walmart is expected to announce a plan today to cut the fat, as in the trans fats, as well as the salt and sugar in the food it sells under its own brand. While we're on the subject of big box retailers, here's a problem many of them face, especially those in the inner city: high turnover and absenteeism. But instead of getting tough, some stores have gotten a social worker. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler explains.
For the past 2 years, this Target store in East Los Angeles has had its own workplace counselor, Rosanna Trevino Perez. Her job is sort of a social worker crossed with a reference librarian.
It's like a concierge service of needs that can be addressed, and they can come to me. It's a one-stop shop.
These aren't your normal workplace issues, more private, personal stuff, like domestic violence or teen pregnancy or health issues.
Those things tend to keep them away, and they don't know how to resolve it. They don't know what other resources they have, home health, any other subsidy.
And with the recession, more employees are facing financial problems, like bankruptcy or foreclosure.
They're spending time at work trying to contact banks or credit card companies or lawyers, or they're just missing work because these things are so overwhelming to them that they can't even focus on their job.
That's Richard Chaffetz, founder and CEO of CompSych, the firm that supplies counselors to Target and other companies.
They want to target the issue of turnover in the stores, and the best way we felt to address that is to provide resources on site for these people for financial counseling, emotional counseling, legal counseling.
Now, you might ask, aren't these the kind of issues that the HR department could handle? Chaffetz says no.
Because of issues of confidentiality, a lot of employees are not comfortable going to an HR person with these personal issues.
Adding a counselor does mean an extra expense, but in the long run, that position could save the company money. Steve Laffery is director of health benefits for Target. He credits counselors for lowering workplace accidents by 24% and boosting attendance 17%. Investing in a counselor essentially paid off in terms of better employees.
More productive, we have lower turnover, we have better guest service scores. Those are all business metrics that turn into better results.
Employee loyalty may become even more valuable in the months ahead as the economy improves and workers start getting other offers. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Well, news this week that Chrysler is working with the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, on a hydraulic hybrid minivan. It would capture power when drivers hit the brakes. Car makers are adjusting to new fuel economy standards. 2012 model cars will have to average 29.7 miles per gallon. This year's average is 27.6. Well, Marketplace's Elisa Roth reports all car makers are exploring new technologies.
John Volkers, the editor of GreenCarReports.com, he says manufacturers are also trying to improve old technologies.
Gasoline engines are going to get much smaller and much, much more efficient.
Making the engines and the rest of the vehicle smaller is the fastest way to make vehicles more efficient, but it can be hard to convince American drivers to buy smaller cars. So car makers are also trying to figure out ways to make them lighter without having to shrink them. Dick Schultz works in the materials department at Ducker Worldwide, which is a consulting firm.
So everybody is scrambling around trying to figure out how much aluminum and magnesium in these new steels they have to incorporate in their vehicles.
Some car makers, like Toyota and Hyundai, already meet the gas mileage standards for next year. But for the ones who haven't yet, it'll be a busy couple of months. I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
And finally, Forbes has come out with a list of the most affluent neighborhoods in America. Steve, do you have any guesses as to where those might be?
Well, I'm thinking affluence maybe somewhere in California, maybe somewhere, maybe South Florida.
No, that is not correct. Okay. I mean, it makes sense, but the winner actually, just neighborhood, is Westlake, Texas, which is right outside of Dallas.
Okay.
It has a population of about 700, including a few CEOs, some professional athletes, and, of course, the Jonas Brothers, who reside in Westlake, Texas.
The Jonas Brothers live in Westlake, Texas. Wow.
Indeed. That's and the median household income there, probably in part thanks to the Jonas Brothers, is $250,000. That's about five times the national average. But Westlake is not without its problems. The town recently had to introduce a property tax to make ends meet, which I'm sure is going to be very difficult for its very wealthy residents to pay.
Yeah.
Anyway, by the way, I will tell you another one. Number two was Kenilworth, Illinois. Do you know? Have you been to Kenilworth? It's up just north of Chicago.
It's got, the northern suburb.
Exactly. And in New York, which is not one of the most affluent, I am Jeremy Hobson.
In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiotakis. This is the Midday Update.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.